Hi, welcome back to our Unclenched podcast, episode number 4. Today, we're going to talk about TMD, sleep apnea connection, and we're going to break it down. At the end of the podcast, we'll answer a couple questions from you, the listeners. But before we get started, I always got to check back with my girl Priya and see what is going on. How are you doing, Priya?
Good, good. I've had a few crazy weekends in a row. So 2 weekends ago, we actually, as a family, the four of us traveled down to Southern California, and there was a big family party, and it was super, super fun. But like, we live up in the Pacific Northwest and a lot of our families in Southern California. So I feel like my kids never get to attend these big parties. And yeah. I feel like they barely know that we're Indian. So it was like this big Indian party. And I think they were just like, whoa, because it was music and dancing. Oh, yeah. And so it was so much fun. But I think they were just sort of taken aback. Like, oh my gosh, this is like our culture. And now we're inundated with it. So that was really fun to like get them all dressed up in the Indian clothes and go to this party. So that was really cool. And to the person it was celebrating is like a patriarch in the family. He's great. And so it was a really fun time. And then the weekend after that, I flew to Kansas City, Missouri for a course with Dr. Prabhu Raman. And so I've just been like traveling. So I'm so excited to be here this weekend and just chill. But it was really fun. How have you been? What's new with you? What's new with your family?
Oh, well, we went to Kiowa Island, which is in South Carolina, outside of Charleston. It was my husband's big birthday. He was the big 6-0. So we went down to celebrate. My sisters were there, their husbands, their families. My kids flew in from New York and Louisville. So we had a great time. It was really, really nice. And then, of course, back to the grind, right? And back to our work. But, you know, it was all good. It was a lot of fun. And it was nice that everybody was together. So we had a family party going on too, but we're not Indian. We're Greek.
You know what? Same stuff. It's all similar.
I know.
I saw my big fat Greek wedding like a long time ago when it first came out. And I was like, this is so like Indian culture. I mean, it's very
similar. You can relate that to Italians, Mexican, you know, you can relate it to any kind of heritage when you got a nice, big, close-knit family. It's wonderful.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, so fun.
So let me tell you about a patient though. And then I know we do a patient then I'll get back to all your patients and stuff like that too. But so this week, I don't know if this ever happens to you, but it seems like sometimes you'll see the same thing and then you'll see another patient the same thing. And you're like, wait, that's three, or the same name. You'll be like, Caroline, I had three Carolines today or whatever. And that's a weird name. And you know how they kind of gravitate together. But this past month, I had a couple gentlemen, same demographic, probably like high 50s, 60s, something like that. And they both had genuine closed locks. So they couldn't open their mouth. They could open about 17, 18 millimeters.
That's very limited.
Very limited. So you can't even get a tray in there to take an impression to
There's
do
no
anything.
Way. No.
So the first guy, he came in and I was able to get a tray in his mouth. So he was about 20 millimeters.
You got a tray in there?
I got a tray in there. He's like, you're never, and that's what he said, you're never going to get a tray in there. And I'm like, oh no. But then I will recontour my trays and I'll cut them down and, you know, I modify them. So I got one in there and I put what's in there, a pivot appliance. I don't know if you've ever heard of a pivot or not.
I've heard of it and I've seen pictures of it, but I've never actually used one.
Yeah. So I made one in my office. They're real easy to make. And on the side that he was locked, you put the higher material. So then that pulls the joint down and the disc will go back on. So I have him wear it for about 2 weeks. And he came back and he's like, Alex, this is good. I'm about 90% better. So when you take the pivot out, then you want to put an orthotic in.
Yeah.
At least that's how I do it. Yeah. And but he couldn't afford the next step. He was just going through some things with job changing. He goes, I'll come back if I need to. I said, well, you're going to need to.
Yeah.
Because this isn't going to hold forever, but maybe you'll get a few months out of it. Sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so that was a good success. And he was very happy. 90%, I thought that's pretty good just with a pivot appliance.
That's amazing.
Then the next guy, though, I really got to modify a tray on him because I just measured him 2 days ago and he was only at about a little under 18 millimeters. So he's really tight, but we're treating him right now with the Beamer therapy and with the red light therapy because I don't tense my locked patients, and because of that bouncing of the jaw, I don't want to damage that disc or constantly pound that disc and cause more irritation. So those are kind of like, I'm like, wow, another true closed locked, because a lot of times they're just can't open because they're splinting their muscles and holding close to home and they don't want to open, but typically I can get in there and kind of open them. But, this guy, I couldn't. And I have tried manual manipulation before. That doesn't seem to work. Or the gag response. If you gag a patient, a lot of times they don't have time to think about it and they'll just open. But they both of them weren't gaggers. And I'm like, great.
So that's not gonna work. So, yeah.
We got the other guy. The jury's still out. Maybe I'll update you on the next one. But how about you? Anything sticking out to you?
Who sticks out to me? Yeah, there's this patient we've been seeing for a while, Yvonne. She had a pretty bad accident. She was a pedestrian and she was hit by a truck in like the Target parking lot. And
oh, wow.
Shortly thereafter, her jaw locked closed. That had never happened to her before. And it took us a while. I mean, it took us months to get her like really fully unlocked and opening to a good range of motion. But she's doing so much better. She even had some dental work done and it kind of limited her range of motion again after staying open. But then now she's almost back to where she was and she's doing really great. So I've been corresponding with her on email, just checking in on her and things like that. And so it's good to hear that she's doing good. She's really happy with treatment.
Good, good,
yeah.
Good. So today we're talking about TMD and we're talking about apnea. Now, I know you use two different appliances. You have a daytime appliance and a nighttime appliance. So why do you do that?
Yeah. So these are just TMD appliances, just to clarify. These are not apnea. So
we'll put apnea. I didn't know what the nighttime one was.
Yeah. We'll put apnea on the shelf for now. So with many of my patients, the way my mentor taught me to do it is treat the TMD. And while you're treating the TMD and while you're getting the muscles and the joints stable, they can, you know, people can use a CPAP to treat the apnea in that time.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So he would never really treat like a moderate or severe or even a mild TMJ case with an apnea appliance, because sometimes it can, in his opinion, it could make things worse. I haven't really dabbled with that because I just do it the way he taught me. So the appliance I make, I use a daytime one and a nighttime one to treat the TMD. They both hold the jaw in the exact same position, but the daytime one is like a lot thinner, so it's easier to speak with. You're still going to sound a little slurpy, kind of like you have something in your mouth, because you do, but it's easier to speak with than the nighttime one. And then during treatment, our goal is to taper people off the daytime one, which we always do. You can't leave active treatment still wearing that daytime one all the time.
Okay.
So we taper them off the daytime one, and then most people choose to wear the nighttime one indefinitely. And they are dependent on that. And that's the trade-off for not getting phase two treatment. They don't get full mouth reconstruction or ortho, but they're dependent on the nighttime orthotic. So that's sort of how I do it. But I know that you use one appliance. So how do you start and what do you do differently from me? Because I know we do things differently.
Yeah. So I start with the same appliance they wear during the day they wear at night.
Okay. Is it removable or is it like cemented?
Well, I start with two different ones. Sometimes I start with a removable one, or sometimes I start with one that's fixed. So it'll look like teeth. They're absolutely beautiful. And a lot of times when I start with my appliances, and we'll get into this once we get into the apnea, then my patients say, I'm sleeping so much better. I'm starting to dream again, yada, yada, all that stuff.
I just heard that yesterday. Literally just heard that like twice, two different people.
Yeah. So let me start this off by talking about two studies. And one is a study with sleep apnea patients. One is a study on TMD patients. So the one study with the sleep apnea patients had 10,000 sleep apnea patients. 37% female had TMD issues, and 63% of the males had TMD issues. So that was sleep patients. And then they saw, okay, we have some TMD issues. Now, the second study was a TMD study. Now, this is taking TMD patients, so jaw patients. So they had decreased sleep quality. The study was done by the National Institute of Health, which stated that 56.9% of chronic TMJ patients were poor sleepers. And the health controller, the ones that didn't have problems, no TMD issues, 22% were poor sleepers. So what do you think?
There's a connection. I mean, I see it, you see it every day in the office. And, you know, I have my patients fill out their health history. There's a questionnaire. There's a lot of questions about sleep. Everybody, I mean, 90% of people have sleep issues, whether it's insomnia or difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, getting up multiple times at night to use the bathroom, gasping for air in the middle of the night, snoring. Like, I see it all across the board. So it's like, there's definitely a connection that we see, but then these studies also show that. So, you know, I think, you know, with this being about sleep and TMD, why don't we start by defining sleep apnea? And it's pretty simple. It's a disturbance in sleep. So you repeatedly stop and start breathing many times when you sleep. For 10 seconds or longer, you stop breathing, and then your body kind of wakes you up, and then you start breathing again.
Right, right. So let me break it down a little more. First, there's ARS, U-A-R-S, which stands for upper airway resistance syndrome. This is a little less severe than sleep apnea. People don't usually pause or decrease in breathing. If they do, it's very mild. Now, ARS, or the upper airway resistance syndrome, is caused by nasal congestion, large tonsils, large adenoids, narrow nasal passages, small jaws. If your jaws are small, you can't get as much air in. Deviated septums, anything that contributes to narrowing the airway, and a tongue tie. That would also be, I think, a sign of upper airway constriction.
Mm-hmm. The tongue tie can make it so that the tongue can't be in the proper resting posture, which is up against the roof of the mouth with a light suction, with the tip being right behind the front two teeth on the little pad of tissue back there. Correct. So many people with a tongue tie actually have low and posterior tongue posture. So that tongue is in the airway, making it smaller. So the way I like to think of UARS or ARS, upper airway resistance syndrome, is I kind of think of it as like sleep apnea's little sister.
So, oh, that's cute. Yeah. Hasn't grown up yet.
It hasn't grown up yet, but it's still a problem, right? So it's like, I don't want to like downplay it, but it's not as severe as sleep apnea, but it's still an issue. And some of the common symptoms we'd see with UARS is the chronic insomnia, like I mentioned before, being a really light sleeper. You wake up at the slightest thing because you never reach those deepest levels of sleep. Low blood pressure, especially when standing up. TMJ issues. I mean, that's what we do all day, right? Recurrent sinus infections, pain, pressure, fibromyalgia-like symptoms, discomfort, snoring. So that's what I see with UARS a lot. And it's interesting because UARS is more of a recent diagnosis. And so I don't know how much every single sleep doctor is diagnosing that versus sleep right. apnea, because I still see sleep doctors say, oh, well, you only have mild sleep apnea. We right. probably don't need to treat it. You'll be fine. And
right.
mild right. sleep apnea is not named correctly. I mean, mild is a big deal. It's twice as bad for you as smoking every day. So mild right. is a big deal. UARS is everything's a big deal. So,
right. No, yeah. I agree. I agree. It's like if you're a little bit pregnant, well, you got to act like you're pregnant.
Yeah.
You got to do the right things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I like that. A little bit pregnant. It's like, well, yeah. you're still pregnant.
Right. 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 Right.
Yeah.
So now sleep apnea, it's a disturbance repeatedly with this, the stop and start of breathing many times when you sleep. And there are two types of apnea. There is obstructive sleep apnea and there is central apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea is just what it says. It's obstructing your airway. So your upper airway becomes blocked many times while you sleep or completely stops the airflow. This is the most common type of apnea. So anything that can narrow your airway, such as obesity, and they used to say, like, if your neck is over 17 inches, but let me tell you, I've seen some petite women that have sleep apnea too. So that's not the only thing if you're a larger person.
Yeah.
So you can have large tonsils, you can have changes in hormones. These can all cause an increased airway obstruction.
Mm-hmm. Big time. And just to go back to the neck, right? There
yeah.
are so many petite women in my practice. Petite women have petite airways. And also not petite women, tall, thin women with the
lanky.
Long necks. They have
and
tall,
narrow jaws, thin and narrow airways. Faces.
Yes. Yeah. Narrow, narrow, narrow. Everything's narrow and tall and thin. And so is their airway. So I had a patient like that, super, super in shape, swims every day. I encouraged her to get a sleep study, severe obstructive sleep apnea.
Wow.
And she had a really hard time accepting that because she was like, well, I'm not an obese man over 50. I'm like, you don't have to be to have
right.
this, you know? And so she's coming to terms with it. She's like, she's going to get another opinion too, which is fine. Like, I want her to, you know, own it. I want her to know like, mm-hmm. this is what's going on and let's treat it, you know? So,
sure.
But I see it all the time. So,
right.
and the other type of apnea, which is not as common, is central sleep apnea. Central sleep apnea occurs because the brain doesn't send proper signals to the muscles that control breathing. So mm-hmm. this is different from obstructive sleep apnea.
Right.
Obstructive is when the breathing stops because the throat muscles relax and block the airway. Central is less common and it's controlled by the brain. It's like your brain is not telling you to breathe. So different health conditions that affect how your brain controls your airway and chest muscles can actually cause central sleep apnea. And because it's like a brain control sort of thing, it's I would say it's a little bit harder to treat.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And yeah, yeah. And so now that we've defined upper airway resistance syndrome, obstructive sleep apnea, central sleep apnea, let's talk a little bit about the best position for those with the best sleep position for those with TMD.
Okay.
Kind of knowing in mind that many patients with TMD also have sleep disordered breathing, sleep apnea.
Right, just like those studies showed.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So I would say that the best position for sleeping with TMD, and I have a YouTube video about this, is actually sleeping on your side with a very good supportive pillow for your neck without mm-hmm. your hand or your fist against your jaw. So the weight won't be on your face if you have a good supportive pillow. Your spine and neck can still be straight if you're on your side, if you have, again, a good pillow with neck support. You're less likely to clench your jaw when you're on your side as well. And I would say probably it's hard to say what the worst sleep position is. I think it's both the stomach and the back. Because
right.
the back, yeah, it kind of makes your jaw drop into your airway, which can worsen sleep apnea. But then on your stomach, you're like really craning your neck to breathe. And that can feed up and affect the jaw in a negative way. So I would say side sleeping is always almost always the best. Now, there are a rare few who, when they sleep on their side, they actually, their jaw will lock closed on the side that they're sleeping on. So I see like two people like that a year. And I literally saw one yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's interesting timing, because when she sleeps on her right, the right side of her jaw will actually wake up with it locked closed. She can barely open. And then she can kind of slowly massage, maneuver, and unlock it. But she knows that if she sleeps on her left side, that won't happen. So if you sleep on your side and you know that your jaw is going to lock in the morning, don't sleep on your side just because I said to in this podcast. use your follow yeah, your gut. Yeah, use your head. I was going to say that, but I was like, that sounds mean. Follow your gut. but yeah. That's funny. What do you think about sleep position?
Well, I agree with all of that. I agree with that. I also like a pillow between the legs to ease pressure on the lower back. But, you know, some people do say sleeping on your back is the best with no pressure on your jaw for TMD. But like you said, unfortunately, sleeping on your back isn't the best position for apnea. Gravity will take place and pull that jaw back and close off that airway. So, you know, it's kind of like we're just going to go around in circles with this.
Yeah, totally. And I have patients tell me, well, my chiropractor, my physical therapist, they told me to sleep on my back and now you're telling me to sleep on my side. And the next person's going to tell me something different. I'm like, oh, I know it's hard, but I almost never recommend sleeping on your back. So
correct.
That's just me.
Nor do I. Yeah.
Well, let's take a moment to go back to those studies. So the one study said that TMD patients have sleep issues, and the other said basically that sleep apnea patients have TMD issues, right? So the TMD and apnea connection with those studies, it's pretty obvious that that connection is there.
Right. And it's like drawing a circle and we keep going around and around. And every day I ask my TMD patients, how is your sleep? Because when they come in and we look at all of their symptoms and we go through their signs and symptom sheet, my question at the end is always, how is your sleep? So a lot of them, when they go through TMD treatment, and this is showing the connection too, they have improvements. Then I know by using my therapies, I've improved their sleep. They're getting up more well-rested. They're feeling better. They're feeling more lively. If not, and if I see their sleep staying the same, I'm like, all righty, now we got to get a sleep study.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I had a patient just yesterday tell me that since he got my nighttime orthotic, he has an Oura ring. So if you're not familiar with the Oura ring, it measures like the different stages of sleep. It measures oxygen saturation. It measures, it's not a sleep study. I'm not calling it a sleep study, but it measures a lot of different things while you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. And he said that before he got my orthotic, he was getting 4 hours of sleep every night. And then since he got it, he's getting 8 hours of sleep. He said, wow. I feel like a different person. And I didn't even tell him that was going to happen. I was more focused on his pain, clicking, popping. But I've definitely, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, let's review the TMJ impact. So understanding that TMJ, TMD primarily affects the jaw. So it can cause pain, tightness, neck pain, ear pain, headaches, migraines, stuffy ears. So lots of different things. And the tightness and the pulling of the muscles can impact sleep quality, due to the role that the jaw has in facilitating the airway. So that can lead to potential breathing issues during sleep. So there's such a connection there. And then, of course, there's the tongue tie and how that all falls in as well. So the tongue tie, you know, can, from a young age, can lead to a development such that the tongue position is low and back. There, that impacts the airway too. And then the tongue position can also impact how our whole face develops. So instead of developing forward and flat and ideally and wide, we're almost like not developing enough. So everything's kind of stuck back, thereby kind of being in the airway.
Right.
So they're so interconnected.
Right. So let's talk about the TMJ affecting the sleep quality. So TMJ is important in jaw movement. You need your TMJ to speak, to chew, to swallow. But a lot of people don't realize something, and you don't immediately think about it, is the importance in maintaining and facilitating the airway. Mm-hmm. If you have TMD problems, you may notice you're having a problem with proper airway, and it starts during sleep.
Mm-hmm. And again, sleep apnea involves breathing interruptions or stopping breathing during sleep. And then TMD can exacerbate those symptoms. So our bodies will always fight to help us. So the body attempts to correct that airway obstruction. Why? Because you need oxygen to survive. So as the body attempts to correct it, what ends up happening is you clench your teeth and you grind your jaw forward. And grinding right. the jaw forward, I'm going to pull my Vanna White here, grinding the jaw forward actually opens the airway. Think of like the chin tilt in CPR, right? So it's like it's opening the airway, and all that clenching and grinding activity night after night after night, it's going to wear on the muscles and the joints here. And it's right. going to get you to our office.
My right. office, and the teeth, break down the teeth if you're clenching and grinding or making more bony tori and making your airway even smaller if they're going mm-hmm. on the roof of your mouth or the inside of your lower jaw. So mm-hmm. what tips do you give to reduce TMJ symptoms while you sleep? So this is reducing TMJ symptoms while you sleep.
Well, like I said, sleeping on your side, if it doesn't make your jaw lock, mm-hmm. is, I think, huge. Getting off your back or off your stomach and going to your side can help mm-hmm. the neck. It can help prevent the jaw from dropping backwards while you're sleeping on your back. Using a really good supportive pillow for your neck. And I've been on the hunt for the perfect pillow. I think I've got one, but I don't want to say anything too soon. Having a good mattress, making sure that your fist or your jaw is not like against, or your fist or your hand is not against your jaw when you're sleeping. That's a big thing. I do speak to some of my patients about before they go to sleep, doing one of those apps, the meditation apps like Calm. Mm-hmm. So relaxation techniques, deep breathing before they go to sleep. And then one thing to note is that there are certain like anti-anxiety or antidepressant medications, SSRIs are the class. So selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that's what that stands for. Those include like Lexapro and mm-hmm. I'm not thinking
Which a lot of people yeah. are on.
Yeah, a lot of people are mm-hmm. on those. For some people, some small percentage of people, and especially women for some reason, because of course we have to deal with everything. It actually, right? SSRIs kind of paradoxically will increase clenching and bruxing activity. Even though they're supposed to reduce anxiety, they have this side effect for some people, not everybody, that'll make you clench and grind even more. So talking to people and just informing them, like I had a patient that started a SSRI during treatment. And she said, oh my gosh, like I totally noticed right away I started clenching more. Other people, they haven't noticed anything. So again, I'm not saying it affects everyone. I'm not telling you to stop your medications. Talk to your doctors about this. I'm just telling you about the things that I noticed that can play into all this. And what about you? What are your tips for getting better sleep?
Okay, for getting better sleep. Now we need a good sleep recipe. It's like your baking cake and you got to get a good recipe and then you'll get a good result. So I always tell my patients, try to go to bed at the same time. If you're typically at 10 o'clock, go to bed or 9:30 or whatever, try to do that as much as you can. I know there's going to be the typical night out or what have you. Where I feel bad for patients that if they are like a nurse and they work turns, those poor people can never get a good, consistent nighttime sleep. But try to go to bed at the same time. Try not to have alcohol before bed. Like if we go out and I have a glass of wine, the next morning my nasal passages are so inflamed and I can't breathe well. So then you're not sleeping well. It will inflame you more. If you take melatonin, not all melatonin is the same. I like REM Fresh. And when you take REM Fresh, what that is it's more of a purer melatonin, but you need to take it at dusk. Don't take it if you go to bed at 10 o'clock at 10 o'clock. You need to take it at dusk. So then it'll hit you at the certain sleep cycle that it needs to help you rest better. Always try relaxation techniques. You know, like you said, listen to an app or just listen to some music, deep breathing, dry brushing. I do this all the time. I don't know if you dry brush or not, but it's a soft brush. You brush down your arms, you brush up your legs, you're always brushing towards your heart. And what that does is it helps with lymph drainage and it's relaxing, just like a hot shower or a hot bath. But the dry brushing is really, really neat. And it does, it just feels good. And you dry brush up your back and it feels good. And no computer or phone, no blue light a couple hours before bedtime. Saline rinse. I always have my patients use a saline rinse. What that'll do is that'll decrease inflammation. Now, some saline rinses, though, people will say, and I don't care if it's like a generic saline is saline, but for some people, saline might dry you out. So there is this other saline rinse that has a little bit of xylitol in it.
Yeah.
And it is called X-Lear. Like instead of clear, it's just X-L-E-A-R. Mm-hmm. And that has some xylitol in it. And that really helps. And it does not dry you out.
Love that.
So at nighttime too, I'm always talking about the big three. And my big three is the tongue in the proper position, roof of the mouth, lips sealed. So you're forced to use your nose and nasal breathing because you need a good oxygen exchange and the carbon dioxide release and exchange also. But one of the other thing with nasal breathing too is nasal exercises. That really helps. So there's a couple good books out there on nasal breathing that I've read. And nasal exercises, if you do the exercises, it really does help. And I know that sounds so silly, but it's the truth. So again, TMJ or TMD and sleep apnea are two separate conditions. Sleep apnea, you'll experience breathing issues throughout the night as your airway gets blocked.
And TMJ, TMD issues or problems are connected with the joints and the muscles and often cause pain, wore teeth, clicking, popping, locking of the jaw, catching. And many doctors will treat them separately. Fine, treat them separately, but the connection needs to be made. And so, you know, I had a patient, sorry, I'm going to go off on a little tangent here, where she came in, I tend to do this, with her jaw locked closed. She's probably in her late 50s. And she had been asking her doctors for 20 years for a sleep study. She's tiny. She's super petite. And she doesn't fit that mold for sleep apnea of the obese man over 50. And when we finally got her in for TMJ-TMD treatment, she could barely open her mouth. She was in a ton of pain. We did the CT scan. First thing I noticed, her airway was tiny standing up. And we take the CT scan. So this is 3D imaging that we do with people standing up. And when the scan is taken like that, when I say airway, I'm talking about the tunnel. It's like a tunnel of space behind the nose and the mouth. And so we want to see that airway nice and wide when you're standing up, because when we sleep, the jaw kind of falls back into that airway. Gravity pulls the jaw and the tongue into that airway. So it's even smaller when it gets smaller when we lie down. Hers was tiny standing up. So it was definitely way smaller lying down, right? So I told her right away, I said, you have a very small airway and, you know, that could put you at an increased risk for sleep apnea. I never diagnose sleep apnea. I'm not allowed to do that. So I always say, would you be open to meeting with the sleep doctor? And she goes, are you kidding me? I've been trying to get a sleep study for like 20 years and everybody tells me there's no way I can have sleep apnea. No way, no way, because I'm so small and I'm a woman and I'm this and I'm too young. And she finally got a sleep study. Severe sleep apnea. So, Yeah. And so she got on a CPAP. We got her through TMD treatment. I mean, just poor thing, though. It's like she was trying her best that she could to advocate for herself. And she still couldn't get the sleep study that she probably could have benefited from and potentially prevented this whole TMD thing that she had to go through, you know, 20 years ago. So anyways, so question is can sleep apnea cause TMD?
And the answer is yes. But I do want to repeat that the gold standard is the CPAP to treat sleep apnea. But many patients can't tolerate the CPAP. You know, sometimes the CPAP will make your jaw worse. So sleep apnea can contribute to making your TMD, TMJ worse. Anytime the brain notices that, hey, there's a drop in oxygen during an apneic episode, it will talk to the other systems in your body. Just like we talked about earlier today, for example, it'll tell the heart, can you please increase your heart rate because I need more oxygen. So your oxygen is carried throughout the body through your bloodstream. Then the brain will attempt to open the airway and tell the muscles to contract. Then the clenching motion is meant to start stabilizing the airway. So the clenching is an issue that can lead to TMD, night bruxing, rubbing the teeth back and forth like we talked about earlier, and wear and tear on the teeth, pain in the muscles, and loosen the teeth. The ever-constant movement of the TMJ causes stress and tension. Also, I got to mention here, too, that chin strap.
Oh, that awful chin strap.
You to wear. And sometimes it works well, but I've had patients say that when I put that chin strap back, then it hurts my TMD. Well, we're forcing the jaw back. And when that happens, then the muscles are constricted, the joint gets pressure in through here. So it can cause TMD problems. If you have a sleep doctor, maybe they can look at adjusting your strap. But also when that strap is on, you still need a lip seal unless you have like the whole mask. But if you just have the nasal cannulas that go up the nose, you need to make sure your lips are sealed with mouth tape.
Yes. Yeah. Totally agree. And, you know, we talk about what can happen with TMJ, TMD, right? Like the things that people experience, the headaches, the jaw pain, the ear pain, the neck pain, the, you know, all sorts of things, locking, catching, popping. But sleep apnea is also very serious, and it can have whole body effects that can lead to stroke, loss of vision, kidney disease, bone loss, dementia, depression, anxiety, sexual problems, heart disease, and even death. I mean, they say Justice Scalia, the night he died, he didn't have a CPAP.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's treating the sleep apnea is as important as treating the TMD. And so for many of my patients, they wear my TMD orthotic at night and they have a CPAP. Now, some of them, of course, cannot tolerate the CPAP, which is what you just talked about.
Right.
So in that case, I make an oral appliance to treat sleep apnea. That is different from a TMJ orthotic.
Correct.
So with that appliance, I build their TMJ prescription into it. So it still holds the jaw in a stable position for the muscles and the joints, but it also opens the airway. And so people that graduate from my TMJ treatment, they're not having clicking, popping, locking, or pain anymore. If they have sleep apnea and they can't tolerate the CPAP, then we move them into the oral appliance to treat sleep apnea. So many people are confused. They think that a retainer is the same thing as a night guard, is the same thing as a TMJ orthotic, is the same thing as a oral appliance to treat sleep apnea. Other people are not confused. So not everyone's confused, but they're all different and they all have their purposes and like times for using them. So oral appliance, golden standard again for sleep apnea is the CPAP.
Right. We don't want to miss that.
Yeah. I don't want to negate that by any means.
Right.
Oral appliances though have been shown to help greatly with mild or moderate sleep apnea. And the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine even says that oral appliances can treat severe sleep apnea. I believe they're saying that more recently. So let's look into that a little more. But oral appliances can be a huge blessing for people because with CPAP, even though it's the gold standard, the compliance isn't high. So it's right. more effectively treating the apnea, but if you're not wearing it, it's not treating it at all. And right. the oral appliance, the compliance is higher, but it's not as effective in treating sleep apnea. So really, it almost balances out. So right. I would recommend treating it somehow. If you're listening and you were told you have mild sleep apnea and we're not going to do anything about it, I would encourage you to advocate for yourself and say, hey, I actually want to do something about it because it'll probably increase the longevity of your life. So not to sound dramatic, but sleep apnea is a big deal.
Right. So it's like we're talking in circles. Is it DMD? Yeah. Is it sleep apnea? Yeah. And they're connected. That's the thing. And neither of them, in my eyes, should even be ignored. And, you know, we're here to help. We're here to answer questions. If there's any questions that you all have, you can always message Priya, message me, and we'll answer them for you.
Yeah, anything we're happy else, to do that. Priya?
Yeah.
One thing
I want to say though, Priya, too, I think that we'll have another podcast that will really break down sleep. We didn't get into that, like what happens during REM sleep, what happens with cortisol levels. We can get a little sciencey on that if we get feedback that people want that, because that would be interesting too.
I think we should do another one on sleep, like the stages of sleep, why each stage is important, how much you should have of each sleep. Based on your age. Like, I think people want to know these things.
Right. Kind of like go through a report and explain what they'd get back, because I don't think the listeners would quite understand what the report said other than the final conclusion, mild, moderate, or severe apnea.
Sure. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Well, let's move on to some questions from the listeners.
Sure.
So what is the association with a narrow nasal canal and TMJ? I'll let you take this one, Alex.
Okay. So the narrow nasal canal, what happens there is that you're not breathing more than likely through your nose if it's narrow, correct? So what's going to happen is you're going to become a mouth breather. You're going to position your head forward, your jaw forward, and just have more of an open mouth breathing going on. And when your muscles are not stabilized and you're pulling more forward in order to get air, then you're going to start to get TMJ problems just from trying to balance your jaw forward in an open position so you can breathe better. So there is a connection, I feel, between the narrow nasal passages. And what I talked about earlier about nasal breathing and nasal exercises. So when I take pictures in my office, I always see what the nostrils look like, and it's like a shot up their nose. So if you come to my office, make sure your nose is cleaned out.
I'm ready.
But if you see your nostrils are small, that means you're not using them. So we need to get you to use your nostrils. So one nasal exercise, I'll give you one little tidbit here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Put your finger over one nostril and breathe in and exhale through that nostril. Do that 15 times and go the other way. And then what you would do after that, and you'll notice your airway kind of cleans up really quick. And then you breathe in through one, breathe out through the other. And you'll feel it improve. So you got to get that part of your body to work again.
Yeah.
And your nose is your best filtration system in your body. It filters bacteria, it filters funguses, it filters viruses. So we need to seal the lips and use the nose.
Yes, seal those lips. I you know, when I'm in public, I just can't, I notice people whose mouths are hanging open all the time and I can't help it. Like I look at them and then I like quickly look away. I'm like, I don't want to be staring, but I'm like, seal your lips. Like figure out how to
I agree.
Your nose.
My husband and I are like that if we're sitting at the airport or if we're just people watching somewhere at a restaurant or something. He'll even point out things like, oh my gosh. And he's a banker. He doesn't know any of this. He's like, Alex, look at that guy's one shoulder's higher than the other. Yeah. His head's forward or whatever. And I'm like, I know, stop. We can't.
I know.
Like, you can't unsee it once you see
you it. You can't unsee it. So the next question.
Yeah, let me give you this next question. You start with this. What does, and I'm not sure exactly what this person meant, but the question was, what does the vertigo / dizziness feel like with TMJD?
I think I know what they meant. So I think they mean, does it feel like, is the room spinning or do you feel off balance or do you feel, I think what I hear the most often is that people feel sort of off balance, like they're on a boat all day. Like they're just kind of rocking and swaying and they don't really have a good sense of balance, or when they bend over to pick something up, their balance goes like really off. I don't hear the room spinning very often. That's not what I hear when people say they feel dizziness. And so, so I think that's what they're asking. That's my best guess.
Like, but I've had definite, and one of the girls that works with me is a perfect example. She actually had dizziness, and I had an ortho patient, as you're bringing the teeth together and you're touching differently. I just took her braces off, but she'd say, when I turn to the left, I get dizzy. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? What tooth are you hitting? And then we find it. And then she'd sit in the chair and she'd go like this again. Okay, it's gone. Weird. So amazing. It is amazing, but there are some that are true dizzy. So that's why I'm like, well, it can be a little bit of dizziness. It can be off balance. It's kind of can be anything.
It could be anything. And I've heard the room spitting too. I've even heard that, but
what is more frequent, because I think all of them truly
can
any
happen.
Kind of uneasiness, dizziness, spinniness can be TMDJ, and you just need to find someone that can evaluate, look at some x-rays, look at some cone beam x-rays, which are the 3D x-rays, and sit down and really talk in depth with you and someone that's not going to blow you off, because that's what Priya and I are here. And we want to give hope to the hopeless and, you know, give everybody a chance at a normal life.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why we're doing this whole thing, is the podcast is, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think that answered that question really well. And that vertigo, that dizziness, it can be, again, connected to the neck too, which again, the neck and the jaw are very intertwined, right? And so yeah, I do see that go down pretty quickly with treatment. That's one of the first things usually that goes down, which is awesome because nobody wants to be dizzy or off balance or have the room spinning day in and day out, right? So
at least not without a few margaritas for the fun of it, right?
That's different. But at least not without a few margaritas.
Well, okay. So this ends our podcast. And so we hope you join us for our next one and learn a little something new. And Priya and I are having fun, and keep the questions coming. Yes. And hopefully we can answer them for you. Thanks for tuning in.